This is John Williams, guest host of the Mincing Rascals podcast. It is Thursday. Nope. Good start.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're not John Williams.
Did I say I'm John Williams?
Yes. You did.
keep that introduction.
Yeah.
I want that forever.
You know
I want
what?
That to be my ringtone.
This has been the Mincing Rascals.
I'm John Williams, and it's Thursday.
We'll drop another pod on you next week. Here we go. Hello, everyone. It is Wednesday, October 13th at 2:03 in the afternoon. My name is John Hansen. I got that right. I'm filling in for John Williams here on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And you can listen to me every weekend on Let's Get Legal on WGN Radio.
I'm Heather Sharone from WTTW News.
I'm Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute.
What's up? It's Brandon Pope from CW26 Chicago and Ebony Magazine.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the clairvoyant proprietor of the Picayune Sentinel newsletter.
Ooh, clairvoyant because you got the, what, 1 out of 5 chance of predicting the outcome of the Astros-White Sox series correctly?
Yes. I love this team, but I think the Astros in 4. And I was right. And now I'm picking the Sky in 4.
In 4. Okay. The Sky, as we are recording right now, are currently 1-up in their best-of-5 series. They have a game later tonight. If they win that, they have a chance to win the WNBA championship Friday night at Wintrust Arena. So hopefully you are clairvoyant about that, Eric Zorn. Are you someone, though, that hopes for the best, and then when you make a prediction, you predict the opposite side just to make yourself feel better in any circumstance?
No, I always try to do my best guess. I don't try to let my sympathies influence my or my desires influence my predictions.
Well, my sympathies go to the White Sox fans and to Austin, the Cardinals, losing a very tough wild card game last week against the Los Angeles Dodgers. So all the Cubs enemies are out. The Brewers are out as well. So Cubs fans, I guess, can sigh a breath of fresh air and just hope for someone else to win. All right, let's jump right into things. And I wanted to start with what's happening in the Mount Greenwood community at Marist High School, where there's allegations of a racist incident at their homecoming dance last Saturday. Apparently, there was achy breaky heart Spanish version, which I've never heard before, played at the dance, and a lot of the students kneeled in protest, or at least that is what appeared to happen in the video. There was a counter protest yesterday from a lot of the Latino, Latinx students at Marist and some others as well. And I'm really torn when teenagers do dumb things, because sometimes teenagers do dumb things and follow the leader or follow their friend by taking a knee or doing something stupid when they really don't mean it. Well, at the same time, teenagers with hate in their heart become adults with hate in their heart, and you hope to stem the tide and stop that as well. So, Eric Zorn, where do you find the appropriate reaction between those two extremes?
I thought this was particularly troubling because it wasn't like one or two kids spray painting a hateful message on a wall, or somebody wearing a funky Halloween costume, or somebody making an ill-advised remark. This was, and when I looked at the video, I saw 2 dozen, 3 dozen or so more white kids kneeling in the middle of the floor. And the fact that they would feel emboldened to do this and not in this day and age to do that, it just seems like it seems ominous to me. Like, we haven't made any more progress than that, that these kids would feel like they could do that. And it was such a large group that did it. It was very troubling to me.
So I don't know if you guys saw the statement from the high school that basically said that it wasn't just the Spanish language achy breaky heart, which I have to say sounds truly horrific on just, you know, many, many levels, but that it was a way that the group was sort of signaling that they didn't like specific songs, and that the high school contends it wasn't specifically targeted towards Spanish language songs, and that it was overblown in the news media as sort of a racial or ethnic thing. And I got to say that anybody who grew up in Chicago or even has a passing understanding of Marist or Mount Greenwood or the other Catholic high schools in that area has to sort of say, well, maybe. But I think regardless of sort of what like the specific facts were at this dance was that there were a number of Latino students at Marist who feel excluded and that they're not necessarily being protected by the high school administration, regardless of sort of this, what happened at this dance. And I think it's important for us in the news media to remember that these things become flashpoints, but that they are usually indicative of larger issues as opposed to sort of a very clear cut. These are a bunch of racist high school students who did X, Y, and Z, because of course it's more complicated than that. But if you're somebody who is shocked to hear that Chicago's primarily white Catholic high schools on the far south side have issues with race and ethnicity, I am sorry to introduce you to 2021. It's going to be a rough ride for you.
I will maybe call rubbish on the idea that this is something that kids do, unless I can see some video evidence that this is a thing now in high school dances, where if you don't like a song, you kneel down in the middle of the floor. And if that's the case, if this is what they do at Marist when they don't like a song, that's extremely stupid. But you would have to withdraw the charge of racism.
Well, no, unless it's a direct counter to the knee down for the national anthem and in a mocking sort of way of that.
Well, if they're doing it when a Miley Cyrus song that they don't like comes on or something, then you'd have to say, well, maybe this is just a musical taste sort of thing.
But there's video from the dance that shows them doing exactly that, that it was not limited to Spanish language songs, and that there were three or four Spanish language songs that were played, and that this was specifically targeted at Achy Breaky Heart. So,
and that's what the DJ company said, that they played three or four Spanish language songs where students did not kneel. And those same students that were kneeling for this song, which, by the way, has a way better title than Achy Breaky Heart, Payaso de Rodeo.
Thank you.
Which is Rodeo Clown. That's a great name. A way better name for
Achy Breaky Heart. That is
the translation.
Yeah.
I think it seems, given those facts, this response to that incident seems completely overblown.
But isn't the taking of the knee like a counter directly to Colin Kaepernick? So if it is not racist in terms of which songs they're choosing, is that a performative? I'm just curious. Is that a performative hip check to the Colin Kaepernick situation?
Well, it sounds to me this school district needs to have a whole diversity, sensitivity training for their students in general, because that's what stood out to me. Kneeling is usually a sign of solidarity, especially during the civil rights movement we're going through. And it feels like this is being co-opted for a stupid grievance about a song at a party, which at its best, at worst, during Hispanic Heritage Month, it is a racist demonstration. I'm interested in seeing how students are responding here and how the administration is going to respond to those student concerns, because oftentimes when you're a minority at a predominantly white institution, you're paraded around if you're good at your grades, and paraded around if you're good at athletics as, you know, the good kid, the kid we're going to put on pamphlets, the one we're going to put out there to show that we're diverse and welcoming and open. But then things like this happen and the school doesn't respond adequately to the concerns of that minority body. So it's on the school here to actually say, hey, we stand with you. If you were offended by this, you know, we need to say outright this was wrong and unacceptable. To me, it just sounds like an excuse. And there needs to be some more training toward the student body, the administrators, and the top down.
Austin, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. I want you to have a chance to finish your point.
I would say, of course there's extreme racial tension and historically extraordinary racism in Mount Greenwood and in the Catholic school community in Chicago. But I guess I understand the Kaepernick point, but I think there was also students who weren't kneeling, like people were just sitting or like laying down
or booing.
And it was sort of an expression of displeasure. And I think for like there are students in the media not saying anything that I have seen about kneeling is we feel disrespectful because this is appropriating something that is done to protest police brutality, for example. It's students saying the entire community of color here at Marist needs an apology for this incident, kneeling during this song. And given the facts that we know, that to me seems like there's a huge disconnect there. of course, that school should improve. This is a consequence of clearly some students feeling like they're not heard and like their school doesn't treat them with respect. But I don't think this incident shows that based on what information that we know.
Well, given all the cultural valences to music in general, the idea that you would disrupt a dance, a homecoming dance, any one particular song because you don't like it for some reason is really crappy on its face. Well, I mean, if there's no racial component at all, it's inevitable that there will seem to be at some point. If you like, oh, we're kneeling down because this is a song by an African-American artist, or it is a song by an African-American artist and we're kneeling down, therefore we're leaving the impression. I mean, it's just a terrible thing to do to other students. Not everybody dislikes the songs that you dislike.
Yeah,
you know, go to the edge of the room and have a
spiked cocktail.
Go get high,
like what we used to do. Yeah. Wait, I didn't say that to that to Austin's answer there. That was just I started saying what we used to do before Austin finished his words. But yeah, I do agree with you, Eric. Maybe this is like if nothing else, a bad manners thing. Like, just because you don't like a song, like, get used to it. You're about to go to weddings for the rest of your life, and you're gonna hate most of the music.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that the polite thing to do is just look kind of a little bit disgusted and annoyed that they're playing a bad song at a wedding, and then quietly go outside and like talk to your aunts. That's what you do when a bad song plays.
You also got to make eye contact with the DJ so they know that you're displeased with the song choice. That's the right way to do it. That's how I do it. Just look at them for a long time.
I was really excited last week when I don't think we really touched COVID, vaccines, anything at all. I know we've had a couple break weeks where we just declare on the Mincing Rascals on purpose or not, just to step away from it. But I am really worried about what's happening with the Chicago Police Department. I don't think people question that the mayor has this right to, and it will probably be upheld by courts, to mandate from city workers that they get vaccinated, including police. And I'm all for vaccinations, and I'm all for mandates in certain circumstances. But we also have a public safety crisis on our hands. And I feel like we are merging or about to merge a public health crisis with a public safety crisis. And I am worried with the police bosses urging folks to not get vaccinated, or urging their officers to not tell the city if they're vaccinated, and warning of 50% drops in cops. I mean, that certainly does concern me. I don't know if there's a compromise here, but Heather Cerrone, what's the latest on either how many cops we know have been vaccinated or what their stance is and where we go from here?
Well, we don't know how many cops have been vaccinated, and we don't know how many cops would potentially be disciplined. But it's important to know what's going to happen after Friday, which is what the deadline set by Mayor Lightfoot for all city employees to be vaccinated. So initially, she said that was the deadline. She wasn't going to push it back. Nothing was going to change. And then Friday afternoon, destroying a little bit of my weekend plans, she announced that actually employees wouldn't be disciplined after Friday as long as they took a test for COVID twice weekly and submitted that information to the city. So initially, this had sort of dribbled out in dribs and drabs. And initially, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, John Catanzara, said, yeah, that's great, wonderful. We'll do that. We like that. And then in the last couple of days, he has been singing a different tune, saying that not only should he hasn't really talked about the testing option. So right now, city employees who are not fully vaccinated can take a test twice a week and still stay in the city's employment and good graces until December 31st, when they have to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated, 2 weeks post the second dose of a two-dose regimen. So I am not sure why all of a sudden the testing option that Lightfoot gave to employees, which is vociferously opposed by some aldermen who wanted to see that vaccine mandate kick in on Friday to protect city workers, to protect taxpayer dollars, who of course pay health insurance for these employees, and to protect everyday Chicagoans who have to interact with these employees, to go into effect. But it won't. So what will happen after Friday is that employees who have not submitted proof of their vaccination, who do not submit the required testing, will be disciplined and asked to go home, as I understand it. Now, pretty much every city employee is represented by a union. So these city employees cannot be fired, you know, with a snap. They have due process rights. They can go, there's a process that they go through, and that's what would start. So we have not always gotten accurate information from the police union, I think is probably a polite way to put it. He announced several weeks before there actually was a new contract agreement that there was a contract agreement, and he mischaracterized that agreement. So I don't know what's going to happen on Friday, but I would say that if a large number of officers are disciplined or somehow prevented from working, it would mean that Chicago is a total outlier. And over and over again, we have seen these vaccine mandates go into effect, and we have seen people who were hesitant or reluctant to get the vaccine get vaccinated. And all of these sort of warnings that 50% of, you know, a given number of employees are going to quit has just been overblown. And I think that often we have heard these sort of warnings of, you know, death and destruction from police unions, especially in Massachusetts, who said, yep, a lot of people are going to quit. And then, you know, only a handful of officers, if that, actually ended up leaving the force. So I don't know what's going to happen after Friday, but the police union has said that they plan to challenge this in court. That is a whole nother process.
Yeah.
But I also think it's important to note that 4 Chicago police officers have died from COVID since the beginning of the pandemic, which makes COVID the leading cause of death for Chicago police officers by about 400 times than violent death. And that's why the mayor is putting this order in.
Well summarized.
So we're That's in a, what she does.
We got a 2.5 month purgatory, is what you're saying, where there's a couple different options for people. I don't know. Do you think it's all? Do you think it's all smoke and no fire? Austin, Eric, Brandon.
So the most recent data we have was from actually a story that I believe the Washington Post did back in May. I want to say of this year around police department vaccination rates, and at that time Chicago had incomplete data, but of officers that went to sort of departmental clinics, like within CPD, or were vaccinated as part of like a code given to emergency workers, it was 1 in 4. So that's a pretty low number, even for May in Chicago. I don't think it would be unreasonable to say maybe right now we're around half, let's say, but probably not significantly more than that. I do think John Catanzara, who I've criticized heavily on this show, has a tendency to overblow many claims. And this may be one of them, that if officers are forced to do this, the force is going to be down, say, 50%, right? Is that something we want to test? We know that many members of the Chicago Police Department elected a guy like John Catanzara to be their union president. He's a very extreme person. Walking off the job for vaccine mandate would be a very extreme action. I think if I was in the city's shoes, I would let officers choose to do the testing option rather than force vaccine mandates.
Would you pay for it?
Still are good.
Would the city pay for it, or them? They pay for it.
I think the city should pay for it.
Okay.
And it's to keep both officers and personnel safe to be able to do that. And you're negotiating with the police union right now. This is throwing another wrench in that. And generally, you want to be able to keep things moving smoothly. And this is sort of throwing a wrench in that. Of course, COVID also keeps things from moving smoothly and officers getting it. But you can, with good testing, you can curb that to some extent.
Can I trademark the expression to infect and serve?
Go ahead. I hereby declare a trademark.
The New York Times reported that more than 460 American law enforcement officers have died from COVID-19 in 2020 and 2021. And it's just, this is a profession which there's a lot of up close contact with people, with citizens, and that can go both ways in terms of infections. I think this requirement by the city is reasonable to urgent. And it is a tough situation that Mayor Lightfoot is in, because if she insists on this, and if Catanzara is even close to correct, and let's say let's say only 20% of officers or 10%, you're still going to have a reduced police force in a time when crime is a big issue for people. And where's the public sympathy going to lie here? Are they just going to end up blaming Mayor Lightfoot if there's like a surge in crime related to this, or there are incidents that people don't, that the police don't respond to quickly? But I think this is a time for city government, for the mayor and everybody who agrees with this decision to really stand four square behind the mayor's decision here and say, look, this is a requirement for city workers. It is for not just for their safety, it's for all of our safety. And let's do this. And if they're going to walk off the job, then they're going to walk off the job. But I don't see giving into. I mean, Catanzaro has put Mayor Lightfoot into a really awkward place, because if she just gives up here, she waves the white flag, then that's a terrible precedent for any time.
On the other side here, yeah, exactly what you're saying, Eric. If Lori Lightfoot were to buckle to this and, you know, create this special circumstance for police, that's a double standard. And it doesn't look good. It looks weak, to be frank. I just wonder if these police actually have the will of a Kyrie Irving on the Brooklyn Nets. Kyrie Irving says he's not getting vaccinated and is willing to not play any NBA games because of it.
$300-some thousand a game he sits out. That's
right. Like, are police willing to give up that
salary? Kind of admire it. Like, I mean, I think it's stupid. I think he's wrong, but like, wow.
And this is a multi, but this guy also has got plenty of other sources of income. For a Chicago police officer, are you really going to give up this major source of income for you based on your, you know, hesitancy about an injection inside your arm?
Would you lose your pension if you lost your job because of this?
So your pension would stop growing.
Okay.
So if you are not at your 30 years, you would accrue only to that point. And if you haven't worked 30 years, you get reduced benefits.
Okay.
But it's health insurance. It's, you know, it's the whole shebang. And, you know, I Chicago is somewhat behind other major cities like New York and Los Angeles. They both big cities. Houston, of course, in Texas is a little bit of an outlier because of the Republican governor, Greg Abbott, there. But New York has had a vaccine mandate for employees for more than a month. Los Angeles is not only requiring vaccination for teachers, but they're also requiring vaccination for students under a statewide order. In Los Angeles, if you go to a bar, you have to show proof of vaccination. So Chicago is very, very, it is the least restrictive in terms of vaccination of any big city in the United States right now. And I think that if we were going to see a big reaction to these sort of vaccine mandates, it would not be in Chicago. I would be surprised to see it in Chicago, since the other cities and other states have had such tougher rules already, and we've not seen that big backlash, which is not to say that Chicago isn't its own special flower with its own special brand of, you know, uniqueness, but I would be surprised that you're going to have any significant number of officers who in many cases make more than $100,000 a year with a significantly generous package of pension benefits and healthcare to say, I'm leaving and I'm going to put my family in that sort of situation simply because of this vaccine, which we all know is, you know, safe and effective and will prevent them from getting an airborne transmissible illness that could kill them regardless of how healthy they are.
I think that in most jobs, you're right with that salary and package. And I think in other cities, being a police officer, you might be right. I just know the last 2 years that Chicago police officers have had with getting their vacation days limited and the extra hour shifts. We hear about so much consternation among Chicago police about who wants to be a police officer anymore. I don't know. I think it's probably somewhere between what the FOP president says and what Heather says, right? I think it might be – it's probably going to lay in the middle there. You're a little muted, Heather. I don't know if you did that to yourself.
Oh, sorry. I don't have my crystal ball, so don't put this on me.
We'll have to wait and see.
So we should say – I mean, Catanzaro could be like to this middle position. It would be helpful if the union president was encouraging vociferously his members to get vaccinated. That would be good for everybody. Unfortunately, it's more kind of bombast and really extreme language.
Because even Governor Abbott in Texas, who signed an executive order outruling any municipality from placing any sort of vaccine mandate, he at least started the statement with vaccines work, go get vaccinated, comma, but. And at least, you know, I still think he's wrong in my opinion, but at least he is doing that. And that's, you're right. That's what makes this so egregious and so alarming, is that the leader of the union is saying this. Let's shift gears here a little bit. Let's talk scooters, because there's nothing that divides the city more than seeing a bunch of these scooters going around. Talking on WGN Radio yesterday, I had a chance to talk to the alderman of the 21st Ward, and he's really pushing for these things to be legislated. By the way, Heather, do we know for sure? Is there a vote today, or when is that vote on when this is happening?
There was a vote today.
Okay.
It passed out of the Transportation Committee, and it is set for a final vote by the City Council tomorrow. So this would set up an e-scooter sharing system very similar to the Divvy system that we all know, and If You Ride a Bike, Love. And this would basically allow three companies to vie for three licenses to put, at least at the beginning, about 6,000 e-scooters on Chicago streets. And unlike the two pilot programs that we saw the last 2 years, these scooters would be allowed to go basically anywhere in the city except the Lakefront Trail. And that includes downtown. And in both of the previous pilot programs, it was banned from downtown. What's interesting is that there are some aldermen who are very pro-scooter, right? Like Howard Brookins.
Yes.
There are some aldermen who are very anti-scooter, like Harry Osterman of the 48th Ward, whose Edgewater Ward includes Sheridan Road. And if you've ever tried to bicycle down Sheridan Road, it's not necessarily super easy. And if you try to ride on the sidewalk, you may run over an elderly woman with blue hair. So he does not necessarily want to see scooters come to his ward.
Yeah, no one seems tepid about it. Everyone seems either hot or cold on it.
Right. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens at tomorrow's city council meeting. The rules call for the scooters to be locked to either a bike rack or a pole of some sort. Also, if you try to ride these scooters on the sidewalk, apparently there will be some sort of alarm that sounds that will say, hey, jerk, get off the sidewalk and get back on the street.
And it's Chicago Party Ant that voices that. So.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how that works. But the idea is that if New York has scooters and if Los Angeles has scooters, then Chicago has got to get with the times, because otherwise tourists are going to come here and be like, what sort of backwater Midwestern town am I in? But it'll be very interesting to see how this works on like State Street or Michigan Avenue, which during the summer months can be hard to walk.
And
down
the 606, which would be allowed under this and wasn't before. Zoran, you ride scooters around? I can picture you as a scooter guy.
I know most people do see me that way, but no, I don't. And so far I've lived outside of the scooter zone. Though when I have wandered into the scooter zone, I found that in previous iterations of this experiment, they are like on the sidewalks and the parkway, that they just kind of get abandoned wherever they are. Now, I wasn't aware of this requirement that they have to be locked up.
Well, I will say that last year on the second round of it, I took a Lime scooter, and I, in order to end the trip, right, to say I'm done, stop charging me, part of it was a picture that I uploaded to the app of it locked to a pole. So if you don't send that picture along, you're still going to get charged money and get a fine. I forget exactly what happened. So it was better the second time, I feel, than the first time when I saw a bunch of scooters floating down the Chicago River.
Yeah, I mean, I basically like the idea. It seems like it would help with congestion, and it seems like a very efficient way to take a trip of a mile or two, do that, you know, the last mile from public transit to a work site and so on. It seems like it's got promise. I can understand the objections of some of these aldermen, but basically I like the idea, and I'd like to see as long as they can put in some of these safeguards that Heather was talking about, keeping people off the sidewalk being a main one, and especially the sidewalks downtown. Because, you know, if you've got someone trying to go down Michigan Avenue or State Street, all of these things, it's going to be hellish. But, you know, in the neighborhoods, I can see it working.
I am so pro scooter. It hurts. there are over 100 cities in the U.S. that have e-scooters. all the major cities, New York, Washington, D.C., one of my favorite places to scooter around, L.A., and people use these scooters to get to work, fill transportation gaps, go to brunch. It's simple. There's no headache with them being in the streets or on the sidewalks. That feels like some sort of overblown talking point to me. Never seen it in any.
Well, you don't drive, Brandon.
Huh?
You don't drive.
I sure don't. That's one reason why it's a great thing.
Well, that's why you don't see it happening. I will say I'm pro scooter, but there are times where it's like a Divya scooter, and you're in the, and it is a little tight, especially if there's not a dedicated lane.
Well, let's just ban some bikes too, because I got issues with bikers on the streets
so
as well.
Only scooters, no cars, no bikes. Brandon wants cardboard scooters.
I'm going to change the subject a little bit here, Heather. Do you know what's going on with proposals to expand the Divvy system to use more e-bikes?
So there are no current plans. The expansion of the Divvy system that Rahm Emanuel pushed through right before he left office included a certain number of e-bikes, and they're still rolling those out. So part of this agreement was we'll do e-bikes and we will expand south and west, and that is still in progress. So there are no plans to add any more e-bikes to the Divvy system than there were under the 2019 expansion.
What's an electric bike in that regard? Okay,
right.
Thanks.
Which are truly like,
yeah,
those are the private hire limousines of Chicago public transit. They're just rare. They cost a little more. They're so lovely. They're great. I encourage everyone to try one of those. You can get around. You can go from like a South Loop to, yeah, say like Osmond's Ward, like Edgewater for like $6, and you can do it in like 25 minutes.
How fast do they go? Do they go faster than the Divvies, or do they just, you don't have to pedal it?
Oh, they go faster, and then the biggest thing is the acceleration's way faster. Ooh. So if you're stopped at a red light, like you can go.
That helps,
but you have to pedal in order to do it. It's not like just a motorcycle. Like a motorcycle. Yeah, I think scooters are fantastic. I will say one big advantage of having scooters in Chicago is that the city's not on the hook for maintaining this or managing the fleet of scooters, unlike they are for bikes. And while the Divvy, while amazing, there are some years where the city spends so much on that system that they could just buy a bike for everybody who would like a bike. And of course it's convenient because there's docks and you don't have to be responsible for something. But that's another thing that's amazing about these scooters is that they're pretty responsive to consumer demand, especially when there's competing companies doing them.
And the other angle here, think about the transportation gaps that exist here in Chicago. We have more transportation gaps than New York does, especially if you live on the South and West Side. If you're trying to get from downtown to Bronzeville or even further or get to the West Side via train and bus, you know how difficult that is?
Yeah,
it takes over an hour.
Are you going to take that via scooter like that far?
No, but you can help use that scooter to cut down on some of that time.
Makes sense.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I will say
you take a scooter to a train. And that's the other thing with Divvy is you have to wait for the city to care enough to build a dock in some of these places, whereas the scooters are truly decentralized. So if people are using them to go to certain places, oftentimes that's where scooters will be.
Do they move them around, or is it only based on where they get dropped off, or there's some relocation that happens?
So there's definitely relocation, and part of this proposal requires whichever firms get the licenses to ensure that the supply of scooters is equitable on the South and the West Side, so that you don't just have scooters downtown or on the North Side. So this last pilot program basically said you got to make sure that 50% of all scooter trips happen on the South and the West Sides. And they were able to meet that standard, which wasn't what happened during the first pilot program, which was one of the reasons that they did it a second time, to see if they could make that work. So that's definitely part of the issue, because the city does not want this to be a thing where it's just one more amenity that you can only get in Lincoln Park and Lakeview but can't get in South Shore. And I think if it turns out that way, there will be some real consequences for the companies that have the licenses.
I interviewed Alderman Brookins yesterday on WGN, and I asked him, hey, it's Chicago, I gotta ask, are any of these companies donating to your campaign contribution? And he said yes. At least he admitted it right off the bat, but he said it didn't shape his decision, so take that for what it is.
Of course not. How could you possibly suggest such chicanery? I am shocked and appalled, John Hanson.
That's great. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Sky, because they have their big game two tonight and game three. And there's the interesting argument about, and I feel like sometimes we go in a circle about this. I don't know if it's true or not, or how much of it is true, about the media coverage of the Chicago Sky. Mayor Lightfoot quoted in Patch saying, "The lack of media coverage of the Chicago Sky, yet another frustrating example of gender bias in the sports world. The simple reality is this. If this was a men's team in the playoff, there's no way there would only be one full-time Chicago Sky beat reporter present." Now, Brandon talked a little bit about this last week, that it was a different day. It was a Saturday when Andy Constable from the Sun-Times was the only person covering it. We kind of talked about this a little bit last week. But is it the chicken? Is it the egg? Is it all of it being scrambled at once that helps gain popularity for women's basketball?
Here's the problem.
Okay.
Clearly, and this goes for every WNBA city, there isn't enough coverage of these teams across the board. However, the Chicago Sky themselves have to hold some responsibility here. They just do not run a great press operation. Part of the job of being a press team for a sports franchise is pitching stories. When there's a lack of exposure, finding ways to increase that exposure, notifying the media about community events and things that are happening with the Chicago Sky. And what this press team has failed to do is do exactly that.
Do you think with the best press team, though, it would make a difference? I mean, I think it would make a difference.
It could help make a dent. But the dealing with the press team myself and dealing with other Chicago sports press teams, there's a big disparity in how they operate.
Okay.
And a big disparity in how easy it is to cover one or the other. When you don't have a press availability, how do I put this? When you don't notify the press about the moving of a press availability, which has happened before this season, that's a problem. You're going to have situations where, well, if you move the press availability from Thursday at 10 a.m. to Thursday at 4 p.m., that's going to shift around some things. People, TV stations have to get ready for newscasts. They were planning for a 9 a.m. press conference. Now it's 4 p.m. All of a sudden, you know, seems right. Like the Bears don't do that. So that has to be addressed as well. However, at a time where the WNBA is surging in popularity, both on social media and on the television screen, now is the time to tell these stories, because the Sky are doing amazing stuff both on the court and in our community.
Well said. Anyone else?
Well, you know, there is the issue of every 4 years in the Olympics, the coverage of the athletes in these really obscure sports can make us care deeply for at least a brief moment as to, you know, who is going to be able to best perform this modified circus stunt. And so you realize that the media does play a big role in making these players into real people for you and making you care about them. I don't know how much gender bias works into this, and how much of this is the fact that the WNBA, you know, it's a game that's played below the rim. It's not as dazzling as the NBA. I don't know that you could say that you could cover the Sky all day long, and I don't think you would get the kind of interest in the team that you would if the Bulls were winning, for instance. But there, you know, so it is. When you talked about the chicken and egg, John, I thought that was a really interesting way of putting it, which is, you know, does media coverage drive fan interest, or should fan interest drive media coverage? I think it's something that it's dealt with in newsrooms all over the city when it comes to sports, and when it comes to entertainment, and when it comes to politics. We don't write about the Green Party very much, and the Green Party complains that if we did, they would be much more popular. But is it up to us to make the Green Party more popular by writing about them in greater amounts than the public seems to want? It's an interesting question to me.
I was looking up sort of the what the trend lines were in terms of revenue for both WNBA and NBA. The average in that, the disparity just in terms of the revenue that these teams make is really off the charts. So the average WNBA team generates about $5 million annually. The average NBA team generates roughly $300 million a year. So it's a really huge disparity in terms of the amount of revenue they generate. And I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm sure this would be probably their response to Brandon, is like, well, we can't fund a super high functioning press operation when we have a lot of other priorities, you know, for the team. In any event, what they're doing is great. I think women's basketball is going to continue to be on the rise in Chicago, especially if we can get more. There's plenty of interesting stories to tell about these players and sports narratives, and maybe people will start loving gambling on women's basketball too. I mean, that's become a bigger and bigger part of athletics generally. So I think the future is really bright for the WNBA in Chicago. Nowhere near the NBA yet.
So because everything is politics in my world, I think if the Sky does win the championship, I think that Mayor Lightfoot could claim having played no small role in this, because she specifically recruited Candace Parker, who is really an all-time great, to come back to Chicago to play for the Sky. And we were able to see some emails that were unearthed by my friends and colleagues over at the Chicago Tribune that made it clear that Lightfoot played a key role in sort of wooing Candace Parker back into play for the Sky. So if they win, be prepared for Lightfoot, who is a huge, huge basketball fan, to take several victory laps. And it won't be completely undeserved.
Yeah. I don't know if this is just something that takes a lot of time, too, or maybe that's just a cop-out. I mean, the WNBA has been around for a while, don't get me wrong, but do things just simply take time? You need storylines in big cities and gradually over time. I mean, as more and more young girls play sports, as that continues to rise in numbers, do young girls become young women who are fans? Or is it boys being more comfortable in general and not being tied to a specific, you have to be hyper-masculine? I don't know. I'm going off a rail here. But you know what I'm saying?
No, like, I was going to say that I think this is the part of the podcast where I point out the rampant misogyny in which we all live and say that, you know, it's not especially cool to follow women's sports for, you know, dudes who are all into the Sox and all into the Cubs and the Bulls and the Hawks and whatnot. You know, like, there's still sort of this sense of, wow, okay, I'm actually enjoying watching women play sports. That's weird. This is weird. Look at that. Let's talk about that, as opposed to it just being, of course, I enjoy watching this sport. They are professional athletes at the top of their game, and they're going to, you know, they're competing for a championship. So I think it's until that flips, it's, you know, that's what's going to hold it back.
I will say, I've heard more about the Sky this year than any other year by 1,000,000,000%.
Yes.
Well, the Candace Parker angle certainly helps that. But what you were saying, John, earlier reminds me a lot of what people have been saying about soccer forever.
Yeah.
Which is, oh, if only kids grew up playing soccer, then they'll become soccer fans when they grow up. But that just really didn't turn out that way. I mean, you have lots and lots of American kids playing soccer when they're kids, and then they grow up, they watch football, basketball, baseball, hockey, like everybody else. They just don't turn out for American soccer. And that may be the case. I mean, the Sky have our attention right now. The question is, are stories about, say, their training camp, their off season, their early games next season, are those going to get the eyeballs and the clicks that news directors and assignment editors are looking at when they're making decisions about what to cover? And that's really the question. So the question is, even if there isn't that interest, even if they don't get the clicks, is it incumbent on sports editors and assignment editors to say, well, we're going to cover this guy anyway, we're going to build this interest through our coverage? Or are we going to say, well, the public isn't interested, they're only interested in the Sky during the playoffs?
Yeah.
And that's
the Chicago Sky have a really rare opportunity here. I mean, you look at the other WNBA cities, the LA Sparks, the New York Liberty, both of those meccas have a lot more entertainment options than Chicago does. So the Sky have an opportunity here to kind of fill in some entertainment blanks. You give another option for people to be entertained for an evening. Take the family out to a game. It's a fun atmosphere. It would serve the WNBA well as an organization, whatever dollars they can provide to help fuel and support the Sky. This is the market you might want to focus on, because the challenge in LA and New York for any new sports team in that area, or any sports team that's not the Yankees or the Lakers, is trying to get people to attend those games. Chicago, we're a sports city. And if you do well in sports, we are going to support you no matter what.
Right. So, and LA has two men's basketball teams. New York has two nearby basketball teams as well. Multiple football teams in those cities, too. Yeah, let's bring a good point that it's very saturated. Chicago is a sports market with a few less teams. Less people, of course, but less teams. So, well, it'll be interesting to see. No matter what, by the next Mincing Rascals podcast, we will have our answer. All right, Eric Zorn, you said it'll be Sky in four. You went with Astros in four, which turned out to be correct. The Blackhawks start their 82-game season tonight. So counting overtime losses, what's your record prediction for the Blackhawks? Can you do this math quickly for 82 games?
I think that the Blackhawks will not make the playoffs this
year. Okay. I think you're wrong.
I think the Bulls will, though.
The Bulls
looking pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, for sure. Tell you what, guys, that's where we're going to leave it here. We got the Sky game coming up a little bit later on. A lot of activity here in Chicago. Heather Sherome, Brandon Pope, Austin Berg, and Eric Zorn, thanks for joining us. We're produced by Aleph Garris and Ashley Byhun. And this has been the Mincing Rascals. I'm John Hansen. Got it right. Nailed it, guys.
You sure?
I'm sure. And we'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.